Uncommon Commons is a horror anthology podcast written and recorded by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Today's story is Dial Tone, written by George Plank.
I'll get it. Huh? Oop.
Don't!
Jeez, Jane, I know you don't like telemarketers, but tackling me over it seems a little excessive.
Do not answer the phone, John Tholomew.
Relax. It's like I was telling you yesterday. We don't have social security numbers for them to steal. Or identities, for that matter.
First of all, speak for yourself. I've got 11.
11?
And growing. Secondly, no.
But...
no. John, you just don't get it.
What, did a phone kill your mother or something? Jane, no. No, it did not.
Okay, it didn't. But how do you know for sure? I mean, maybe one of the 12 identities I have could have had that happen to them.
I thought you said it was 11.
Just for that, it's 13.
No, my identity.
Well? Are you going to get that?
The mail or the phone?
The mail. The answering machine will catch the call.
No one is available to take your call. Pretend otherwise.
Come on, Tony, pick up, man. I know you're home. They aren't doing too well. Something's wrong with the pizza. There's blood everywhere.
Look me in the eyes and tell me you wish that you had taken that call.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I feel like most of my friends' households had some type of rule growing up that their parents swore up and down by. Of course, as children, we wouldn't dare question it, accepting whatever our parents told us as gospel. They're only looking out for us, after all. Take Marie, for example. Her mother told her that she would have to wait an hour after eating before she could go swimming. I feel like a lot of people have heard that one before. Supposedly, it's because you'll get cramps and could drown. I think one summer, we all gathered together and nominated Stephanie Mullins, the bravest soul I ever met, to put it to the test. I remember that particular pool party clearly, as we were all on the edge of our seats. We watched with morbid fascination as she had half of a sandwich and a few cheese curls before snapping her goggles into place and plugging her nose. The splash from her cannonball made us all hurry to remove our towels from the edge of the pool. In total, she did about 3 laps around the pool. I remember the last one was a backstroke. God, she was cool. Ever the show-off, before standing in the shallow end and giving us all a little bow. We all jumped in after her and splashed each other till our fingers were prunes. Trisha had a similar one. Her grandmother wouldn't let her turn on or even stand near the television during a lightning storm. That one, I later found out, had some truth to it. While incredibly unlikely, if lightning were to strike the house, it could cause a power surge that could blow out the TV and electrocute you if you happened to be standing a little too close. It's not so bad, though, and it can mostly be prevented with a surge protector. My mom had a similar belief, though she never mentioned it in passing. I had to learn it the hard way. I think I must have been 7 or 8 at the time, and my mom was in the kitchen chopping something for dinner. It didn't matter to me. I was at the kitchen table coloring, as a kid is wont to do. Melanie, could you call your dad in for dinner? I think he's in the garage, my mom said. Sure thing, Mom, I replied, putting down my crayons. I started walking towards the door to the garage before I saw the landline hanging on the wall of the kitchen. Just then, the funniest joke that my 8-year-old brain could think of entered my head, and I couldn't help what came next. I picked up the receiver and held it to my ear. The dial tone hummed in that familiar tune. Hello, garage? Could you connect me with Dad? We need him in the kitchen. My mom smiled weakly and looked up from her vegetables towards where I stood. I had an even bigger smile on my face and wide eyes that screamed, "Did I do a good job? Was that funny?" Her eyes moved from my face to my hands, and her face dropped almost immediately. She dropped the knife she was holding and started barreling towards me. Now, I should mention that my parents never hit me or made me feel threatened in any way. That didn't stop me when I saw my mom rushing towards me from putting my hands up in a defensive position and covering my face. For a moment, the humming of the dial tone stopped and the world seemed to go silent.
Melanie.
I heard my mother yell, and I thought I heard someone else say it, too. She grabbed my wrist and snatched the phone from my hands before slamming it back down into its housing. Nothing had happened, but I could feel tears welling in the corner of my eyes. She placed her hands firmly on my shoulders and looked me square in the face. Sweetie, look at me. I fought to open my eyes, but I did as she told. Listen, sweetie, don't do that. Don't ever put a phone to your ear if no one's called you and you don't intend to call someone else. My mind should have been flooded with questions. Questions like, why? What will happen? But I didn't ask. I just wanted desperately for the moment to be over, so I just said, okay. She closed her eyes and breathed deeply. The same contented yet shaky sigh as if she had just defused a bomb with only a second to spare. Please get your father for me, she said, and that was the end of that. I didn't think of it much after that. I was a little shocked that it happened in the first place. My mom didn't mention it again, and I wasn't sure how to bring it up to Dad. So it just went unsaid. In truth, I almost completely forgot about the whole ordeal. I was just left with a vague resentment for our home's telephone, and I don't want to say that it resulted in a fear of telephones, but I was certainly uneasy around them after that. So I definitely remember the day I got my first cell phone. On the one hand, I could be out and about with my friends and still be reached. If something were to happen, like a car accident or something, I could easily call for help. I would always feel so vulnerable when driving without my phone, or worse yet, having it, but having it be dead. A circuit board-laden brick. On the other hand, I could never shake the feeling that there was something wrong with it. Like having a phone on me at all times meant that the very thing my mom was afraid of was within mere inches of me, just waiting to jump out and grab me. Sometimes I wish it would. Just get it over with. Shortly after getting my phone, I had the opportunity to exchange numbers with someone. His name was Ryan, and he was just a few years older than I was. I don't know what it was about him that drew me to him initially. Probably his confidence. He was standing in front of me at line at the grocery store. He had his cell phone pressed against his ear. It was one of those fancy ones of the time that flipped open and were so thin. No, I told Jeeves a million times. Invite the Queen of England, but not the Prime Minister of France. If I have to listen to his Jerry Lewis impression again, I think I'll... He glanced over his shoulder at me and stopped mid-sentence. I have to go, Percival. I think I just saw the most important person in the world. I smiled weakly and decided to play along. Who were you talking to? I asked, certain I knew the answer. No one. I was just hoping I could get you to talk to me. Sure enough, his screen was blank, save for the people in his circle waiting for him to call them. Something about that didn't sit right, but I hadn't thought about it in years, so my mother's warning didn't come to mind, and how could it? I was momentarily distracted by other things. We exchanged numbers, and the rest, as they say, is history. Ancient history. We spent a few nights up talking on the phone. We hadn't even gone on a date yet, and we were already learning so much about each other. For example, he worked at a video store, he had three brothers, and he was afraid of heights, but loved roller coasters. It was here that I decided to reveal my fear of phones. I don't know why, but I felt like I could trust him. I had remembered what my mother had told me all those years ago and how it made me feel. Huh. I've never heard that one, Ryan replied after a moment of silence. Isn't that one of those old wives' tales, like the one about the pool? No, I interrupted. My friend Stephanie tried that one and proved it was wrong. He must have been drinking something because it sounded like he spit it out.
She did?
Yeah, she ate and then swam with no issues at all. Oh, he said. That pool myth, I thought you meant... Never mind. With that, he changed the subject. Let's change the subject. What are you doing Saturday? We made plans to meet up at a local coffee shop. The cafe was in the heart of a small shopping strip in the city called the Shops at Witch Lake Plaza. I had never been before, but he seemed to know his way around perfectly. The two of us got our drinks to go and walked past the rows upon rows of trendy boutiques. One of the stores looked a little older on the outside. Painted in gold lettering on the outside were the words Antique Mall, with a wide collection of knick-knacks and curios in the window display. I felt Ryan gently tug at my arm, and I followed him with no protest whatsoever. The Antique Mall had the expected sorted goods, chandeliers, clothing from the 60s, and a couple of porcelain dolls with eyes that seemed to follow you no matter which direction you went. Ryan made a joke about them being haunted, but I contended that if anything here was haunted, it would probably be the toys over at the table in the corner with the creepy guy looming over them. Like most antique stores, the definition of antique was up for interpretation. Soon we were coming upon items that were maybe only 10 or so years old, but they had been labeled as antiques just due to the fact that they were either collector's items or obsolete. Dozens upon dozens of fast food collector's plates and mugs, glass ashtrays, and whole hallways of landline phones. I felt my grip on Ryan's jean jacket get tighter, and in turn his arm around me made me feel more secure than before. I didn't know what I was so scared of. Soon I was even looking at a few of them, marveling at their buttons and dials. Hey, this one looks like the one we had at home, I said, pointing to an off-white model with a thin housing and handset. Oh, so this is the one that started it all, he said with a tone of false reverence. Why, I oughta, and he started aggressively pressing the buttons. He picked up the receiver and put it to his ear. Uh-huh. Okay, I'll tell her. It's for you. He extended his hand with the receiver in it. I swallowed for a moment, and thinking back, I almost expected to hear the same hum from the dial tone back at home. But this phone wasn't connected to anything, so how could it? Who is it? I ask, not fully ready to take the phone just yet. Hold on, I'll check. May I ask who's calling? Oh, okay. He turned back to me. It's the scary phone grabber. He says he wants to say sorry. I chuckle a little to myself. Okay, I'm just being silly. There is no one on the end of that line. I take the phone from him and raise the receiver up to my ear. Hello? There's no dial tone. Nothing. Just silence. I rack my brain trying to channel 8-year-old me and come up with something funny to say. Just when I think I have the perfect joke, my thought process is interrupted with just one word.
Melanie.
I look up at Ryan, half expecting, half hoping that this is just another goof of his. But I watch as his face remains motionless, as again the voice comes through the receiver.
Melanie. There you are.
The phone then erupts into a busy signal. The sudden noise makes me drop everything, including my coffee, on the already stained carpet. I look to Ryan, then I look to the door. I choose the door. I make a beeline straight for the exit. Ryan calls after me, but I'm too far gone. I hear the click of a receiver before the bell of the door opening, and I am once again in the open air. I feel like I don't take a whole breath until I'm back in my car. The doors are locked, and I'm all alone. No, that's not true. I can feel the weight of it in my front pants pocket. It's heavy. Much heavier than Ryan's sleek flip bottle. It feels like a growth. I am hit with guilt and embarrassment. I try and get my breathing under control. Oh, God, what have I done? I should call him and let him know exactly what happened. He'll understand, right? I fish his phone out of my pocket and I start to dial his number. Before I'm even done, it rings. He's calling me. Okay. I try to compose myself before hitting the green phone button and answering the call. Hello? Melanie, what happened? I'm sorry. I thought I heard something, so I had to get out of here. It's okay. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have pushed you like that. It's perfectly fine. The line went quiet. Ryan? I look at my phone. A battery icon with a line through it flashes in the top right screen. Ryan, are you there?
No, Melanie.
A voice echoes from within the phone. What do you want from me? I yell.
You called me.
This time the voice didn't come from the phone. I heard a shifting from the back seat. My eyes wouldn't let me look into my rearview mirror. In fact, I couldn't move at all. I was completely paralyzed with fear. I felt its hands wrap around the back of my car seat and its ragged breath beat down on my neck. Its breath came out in a hiss that sounded like the hum of a dial tone that just got louder and louder. My vision just faded to black for a moment, and I was jolted awake again by the sound of something tapping against my car window. And something else. I looked up to see Ryan standing outside. I didn't give it a second thought. I threw open the door and threw myself into his arms. "Hey, is everything all right?" he asked. I looked into the back seat of my car to see it just as messy as ever, but no evidence of any unexpected visitors. "Yeah, it's okay. My phone just died." "Well, I'm sorry about what happened. Is there any way I can make it up to you?" I look up into his big, beautiful brown eyes and I say, "I'm sure we can think of something." The moment is ruined by that sound again. "Aren't you going to answer your phone?" I ask. "My phone's not ringing," he says. And he's right. It's mine. And it would continue to ring. Long after I got rid of that phone. The ringing lived on. Long after Ryan ceased to.
Stop right there, whoever you are.
Jane, you know me. It's John.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm the only John Doe in the apartment. Don't you know it's illegal to read someone else's mail?
I'm familiar with the concept, yes. Don't you know it's illegal to steal someone else's identity? And don't you have enough identities already?
You're right, random citizen. I should be using my powers for good. Here you go.
It's just a card that says, "Your name is Daniel."
Nice to meet you, Daniel. My name is... George Plank? Sounds like a loser. Oh, I get it now. Playing pretend is fun and all, but when you play with people's identities, the real loser is you.
What's going on? Why did you say it like that? Will somebody get that phone?
I told you if you ever called back again, there would be consequences. Now, you have to leave a message.
Tony, everything is fine. Please come to the pizza shop and bring Mary.
Uncommon Commons is a podcast. It is written and recorded by Alex Vitale and George Plank. Our theme song was written by Charles Adam Robinson, and our logo designed by Sam Vitale. Special thanks to our patrons, including Nolson and Mel, who contributed at the $5 level. For $1 a month, you can get access to all of our bonus content, including the Common Area and our actual play mini-series, Need to Escape. Rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay. And remember, nothing is real.